Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech, a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, March 8th, 2024. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle, joined once again by Clean Tech PR veteran Mike Casey of TigerCom. Mike, it's good to see you again after seeing you in person in real life last week. That was very nice.
It was really cool. We got to have our friend Stephen Lacey on and 18,000 of our best friends.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
Really good time. So we, as always, want to thank our listeners for sending in those story recommendations and nominations for Clean Techer of the Week. You can send those to rew@clarionevents.com. Always have a link in the episode description as well. All right, Mike, let's get started with our first story this week.
Ayman Farhat from Bloomberg wrote a story titled "Spanish Power is Almost Free with Renewables Set for Record." This is one interesting one, John. What'd you think?
Yeah, it is interesting. So Spain saw some widely low day-ahead electricity prices this past week, remaining below 10 euros per megawatt hour, along with some record high clean energy production at almost 14 gigawatts in February. At one point, prices reached 2 euros per megawatt hour compared to 67 euros per megawatt hour in France. In 2019, renewables in France generated about 7 gigawatts per month. 5 years later, that number has nearly doubled. Mike, what do you think?
I think this story is a little bit of a harbinger from the future, and it's a good one. So it's great to see the numerous positives that result from clean energy scaling, and kudos to the Spanish for being leaders on the continent, and they're reaping some of the benefits. There's a little bit of market dynamics here. They involve some changes. It's impacted utility earnings. So Spain's Endesa SA said its 2023 profits dropped by nearly a third, and power flows have changed. With energy prices this low, Spain can now sell electricity even to France, which is one of Europe's biggest, most longstanding energy exporters. John, story number two.
Yeah, this one's from The Guardian, called "Fury Over Exxon Chief Saying Public Is to Blame for Climate Failures." Mike.
Okay, let me see if I can follow the logic here. I must say it's kind of tough here. So, one. Despite knowing it was driving the climate crisis, this company funded decades of front group activity to talk down the climate science and its ghastly ramifications. Number two, you read politicians to attack climate solutions technologies that could provide consumers with affordable alternatives, but of course would eat into ExxonMobil's profits. Three, you take hundreds of billions of dollars in unpopular government handouts while having your political stooges and talking heads attack renewables for the limited policy support. Number four, you mount a greenwashing campaign around algae, then you back away from it. Number five, you assert that consumers are at fault. John, did I miss something?
No, I don't think so. So here's the gem of a quote. The people who are generating those emissions need to be aware of and pay the price for generating those emissions. That is ultimately how you solve the problem. So, disclaimer, on its face, that sentence, in a vacuum, none of the other stuff of Exxon backroom deals and funding the climate change movement, all of that. That sentence, I don't think is that wrong. And you can disagree with me, but if there isn't demand for the product in an economy that was built on the back of the fossil fuel industry and so much wealth creation, energy access spread across the world, all those things. I think he's right with that sentence, but Exxon has funded those interests. Exxon is in the pockets of politicians. Exxon is doing everything it can to not let the social cost of carbon get baked into,
the top line of his product. So that's my reaction to this story. Do you have any rebuttal to that piece? Because I warned you that I might disagree with you just slightly on this before we started recording, but not in the totality of what you were saying.
No, I think you are being a strict interpreter of that one quote. But I think for the whole thing, I'm going to introduce a potentially new feature here called the no pen.
No.
That's what I got to say.
I am a serious journalist, Mike, and you brought out a like Staples or Office Max thing that you bought at the end of the aisle.
These things are awesome. You need one of these things.
To who? All right. Story number
to
three.
When your co-host, when he's totally wrong, give you a no.
We're done with this. If you would have done that when I was at DistribuTech International, walking out on a keynote stage to 6,000 people, and I hear out there in row 250, no, this would have been over. That would have been the last episode of This Week in Clean Tech.
That's why I wait to spring it on you when we're back here. So it's a safe space for experimentation.
We just need to cancel this. Story number three, Mike.
Josh Shull from Bloomberg wrote, New York awards offshore wind deals to Ørsted Equinor. All right, John.
Yeah, is offshore wind back? So, I mean, Ørsted, when it was questioning whether any of these projects were viable in the U.S., said that they would rebid. And here we see that playing out. A few months ago, we were talking about cancellations and delays in offshore wind in the U.S. left and right. New York State's now agreed to buy electricity from offshore wind farms in the Atlantic, albeit at a higher price, now giving some hope to the industry that's been really hard hit by inflation with these massive CapEx projects. Selected projects will produce over 800 construction jobs and invest $2 billion in economic development statewide. Mike, your thoughts.
So one of the companies selected for this project is Ørsted. And as you point out, they recently had to cancel two offshore wind projects with a planned capacity of over 2,200 megawatts because of inflation and high interest rates. But here they are reducing its losses to about $261 million compared to a $790 million loss without this deal. So I, too, feel the faint ray of hope coming back to offshore wind, and it's a sector that I've worked in, so it's got a soft spot in my heart. All right, John, story.
One last point on that, though, Mike. So we always try to dispel the green premium, and for most of our mature technologies, that has largely gone away, like solar. I mean, the cheapest cost of generation. There is still a significant green premium aligned with offshore wind that we have to come to terms with if we want that to be a significant source of clean power generation in this country. And right now, with high interest rates, supply chain messes, it hurts. And the companies that are trying to build these projects, they're hurting too. So I wonder if this is a temporary victory. Like, how long can that industry wait for things to fizzle out? Because, an industry that was largely dependent on a low rate, low CapEx environment, when's that coming back? I mean, is it going to be like this for a while? So I don't know. I've got kind of mixed feelings on offshore wind right now. All right.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to hear what the analysts have to say about that. So yeah. Story number four, my friend.
Yeah, this is from the Washington Post. A new watchdog satellite will sniff out methane emissions from space. A methane narc, if you will, Mike. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad a satellite is doing the sniffing and not you or I. But in the short term,
well, no, we all are, buddy. I think we've all had a little bit of methane in our day.
Fair enough. Cutting methane pollution is where it's at when it comes to meeting the global climate crisis. I mean, it is the immediate polluter. It's very potent, and it doesn't have that delayed effect that carbon pollution does. It's driving about one third of global warming, and the IEA predicts that 75% of this pollution could be avoided, often at no cost. So cutting it is one of the fastest way to slow down this crisis. It doesn't last as long as carbon. It disappears in about 12 years, but it traps 80 times the heat that carbon pollution does. So this satellite is scheduled to transmit data later this year. It will monitor regions responsible for 80% of the world's methane supply, revealing the largest methane polluters, probably in the oil and gas industry. Sorry, Darren Woods. At COP28.
No.
At COP28, most oil and gas companies agreed to slash their methane pollution by over 80% by 2030. This satellite will keep them accountable. All right, John, what do you think?
Yeah, so the current fleet of satellites out there produce blurry images that don't have the capability of distinguishing one oil and gas company from another, led by the aptly named Methane Sat. This satellite is the first of a few that aim to provide accurate and detailed methane pollution data to the public. You can zoom in on an individual oil and gas basin field, individual facilities as well. And once that data has been vetted for accuracy, companies must find the cause of the leak, share it with federal regulators, and fix the issue if it violates the Clean Air Act. Could have a huge impact on global warming. So we'll see. It's basically a public doxing of bad actors, which, you know, it's kind of fun, you know, if you talk
absolutely
to you, all right, part of this climate fight. All right, story number five.
Our last story is from Evan Halpert at the Washington Post. It's called "Amid Explosive Demand, America is Running Out of Power." So this story, it's pretty interesting. It's leading the screen on WashingtonPost.com. I should note that we've had Evan on the show before, and we wanted him back for this story, but we couldn't make the timing work with him. But it's another impressive piece of reporting from Evan. John, what do you see this as the significance here?
Yeah, so as demand for industrial power increases to record highs, utilities are struggling to keep up, projecting that there won't be enough transmission capacity. And right now, the U.S. struggles to bring online 1,000 miles of transmission lines a year, and the median new transmission need is 47,000 gigawatt miles of high voltage lines by 2035. Demand for electricity doubling from 2022 to 2023, mostly due to AI enabling us to quickly build large warehouses that require a lot of energy. The CEO of OpenAI, Sam Altman, said at Davos recently that without a breakthrough in energy, namely fusion, we just will never reach the heights of AI. And what's really interesting, Mike, with this story is so many of these industrials and data center owners and operators are going behind the meter and saying, if we can't get the power, we're gonna pay whatever it takes for us to get that power ourselves. Why is Bill Gates investing so much in nuclear? Why is Amazon investing in nuclear? They can't get the power.
Yeah. You know, John, just to put a plug in for our venue from last week, Zach Cass, one of your keynote speakers, was talking about AI, and he talked about this as being one of the constraints on AI. So due to the influx of data centers built on these best sites, areas with major internet infrastructure and tech talent are becoming few and far between. So that's driving data center location out into rural areas. So it's really not about the land. It's about access to power. And some developers had to sell the land. They bought it at inflated prices after utilities couldn't come up with the grid hookups. So some real impacts here with the grid unable to keep up with these demands. It's delayed coal plant closures and paused data center incentives in some states. Princeton's Jesse Jenkins said that by 2030, the U.S. could lose out on 80% of the pollution reductions from the IRA if transmission construction stays at the pace it's at now. All right, John, we're about out of time, but before we wrap up, let's go to our Clean Techer of the Week.
This week's Clean Techer of the Week is EDP CEO Miguel Stilwell D'Andrade for EDP's remarkable 2023 performance. I will, just a peek behind the curtain and looking at the fourth wall, that was my second attempt at D'Andrade. And apologies to him. I really did my best. So I needed Mike to be nice to me and give it to me again. Last year, they invested globally more than 6 billion euros and generated 56 terawatt hours of energy. So congratulations to EDP and to Miguel for being our Clean Tech of the Week.
And he's never going to advertise on Renewable Energy World.
Nah, he doesn't anyway. He doesn't anyway. We'll call him. We'll send him this. Look, we're at 13 minutes, Mike. I'm having so much fun this week. I feel like I've got some wind under my sails. And 13 minutes, we're giving you two back. You should thank us for all those weeks we went, you know, 18, 20 minutes.
I'll tell first listener Ellen Petrie she needs to give you all the credit for that. So I want to give a shout out to our terrific producer, Brian Mendez, who it is clear now must send you, John Engel, your own no pen so you can keep up with me, and to Alex Peterson and Claire Quirin for helping us gather these stories.
Yeah, and please make sure you subscribe, give us feedback, share those story recommendations and Clean Techer of the Week nominations, and check out Monday's episode of Factor This. This is an interesting one. I'm talking to NextAmp CEO Zeta Shai about the growth of that company. So about 10 years old. And when we talk about scale and clean energy, we always talk about the utility scale guys and these big, big multi-gigawatt projects. Well, NextAmp's been picking at them across the Northeast and spreading now across the country. A megawatt here, a couple of megawatts there. That's a $1 billion company now. So they're proving that you can reach scale at the DG level. And I'm fascinated by what NextAmp is doing and what Zad has put together there. So please do check out that episode on Monday. All right, Mike. I'll see you next time.
I will see you next week, my friend. Take care.
Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.